Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.
At the intersection of race, religion, and politics, what is the role of the African American church? I'm Lawrence O'Donnell, sitting in for Warren Olney, and this is Which Way LA, KCRW's ongoing series on the issues Southern Californians care about. Barack Obama addressed the issues of race and religion yesterday as he once again distanced himself from the controversial sermons of his former pastor, Jeremiah Wright. Today on Which Way LA, what are the roots of the black church in America, and what is its role in African American culture? How different are black and white Christian traditions? First, here's the news. I'm Lawrence O'Donnell, sitting in for Warren Olney, back with Which Way LA on KCRW. Yesterday in Philadelphia, Barack Obama addressed the potent issues of race and religion in a speech designed to allow his campaign to get past the controversy created by some of the sermons of his former pastor, Jeremiah Wright. How did it come to this? What is the role of the church in African American culture? How different are black and white Christian traditions? Our first guest is Ronald Kessler. He is the Washington correspondent of Newsmax.com and the author of The Terrorist Watch, Inside the Desperate Race to Stop the Next Attack. Ronald Kessler, you had a hand, if not the leading hand, in getting this story to the public. What made you start studying the sermons of Jeremiah Wright?
Well, first, I mentioned that I've also done stories critical of Hillary Clinton based on Secret Service observations of how nasty she is, and comparing that with Barack Obama, who is very decent with his Secret Service, and I think that's very important. And I've also done stories about John McCain's temper. But on this, I got an email from a friend who said, there's this stuff on this website of Barack's church about the black value system, about we are unashamedly black. And then as I looked into that further, I found some definitions of that, which include statements such as America puts blacks in prison rather than killing them off. I mean, just crazy, crazy stuff. And I couldn't believe it. And then as I looked further into it, I did do a story based on that. But I then found that the church and Reverend Wright had given an award just in December to Louis Farrakhan, and that Wright was quoted in the Church magazine as heaping praise on Farrakhan as someone who epitomizes greatness, and that was January 14th. And then after that, Barack Obama issued a statement saying, well, that award was just because of Farrakhan's work with ex-offenders. Well, that was just made up because there was no mention of ex-offenders in the magazine or in the presentation. Rather, it was a Lifetime Achievement Award for his great works. So that was, you know, how it all started. And the latest speech, just to me, doesn't have much to do with the fact that this is someone that Barack Obama has been associated with for two decades, not only as his minister, but as his friend, his confidant, his sounding board. At the least, it shows poor judgment. And beyond that, I think it shows that Barack Obama actually has an affinity for some of these views.
The speech got rave reviews, probably not surprisingly to you, in the editorial pages of the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, the New York Times calling it a profile in courage. What is the chatter on the conservative websites like yours, Newsmax.com, and others, and conservative newspaper takes on the speech yesterday?
Well, you know, I said in a story yesterday that it was very eloquent, that it was brilliant, but it's just words, you know, and when we evaluate presidential candidates, or when we evaluate someone we're going to hire as an electrician or plumber, we have got to look at their track record, at what they've actually done, and not necessarily at what they tell you. And to just disregard this to me is really dangerous. Actually, Newsmax has quite a few Democrats who are readers, and some blacks who've said that I don't know what I'm talking about because I'm black, I can't understand it. Well, I interviewed For the story yesterday, my friend Warren Williams, who wrote a book called Enough, which is all about black victimhood, and he says that this is what black leaders, some black leaders and some preachers do to get support. They emphasize that blacks were slaves, and they create this whole ideology of victimhood, and it's harmful, and he says it's simply bigotry, to express the kind of hatred that Wright expressed, and paranoid thoughts that the U.S. caused the AIDS virus to kill blacks, that the U.S. Deserved the 9/11 attacks because of our racist society, that that the U.S. does put blacks in prison purposely rather than killing them off. Of course, it's the first time I've heard the government has been so efficient and well organized that they've been doing all these things. But if John McCain had a minister and friend and sounding board for two decades who gave an award to David Duke, you would pretty much have to forget about his candidacy. What I see in Barack Obama's response is an effort to, on the one hand, give the impression that he's disavowing everything, but on the other hand, he also wants the support of this segment of the black community that does buy into this victim approach, because it doesn't actually denounce his minister. He denounces the words. He says, well, of course, I've heard controversial comments, which, of course, could mean anything. He really is playing with words. He's claiming that he never heard these particular comments. If he was unaware of them, he's one of the few people in Chicago who was unaware of them, and that's another problem in a president if he's not perceptive enough to know. Well, of course he knows. Of course that's why he joined the church.
We're talking with Ronald Kessler, the Washington correspondent of Newsmax.com. Ronald Kessler has helped break the story about Jeremiah Wright's controversial speeches. Yesterday, Ronald Kessler, Barack Obama said, "There will no doubt be those for whom my statements of condemnation are not enough." You seem to be one of them. In your piece in reacting to the speech, you said the truth is that Obama joined the church because he feels an affinity for what Wright has to say. It seems at root, and am I oversimplifying when I say it seems you simply don't believe Barack Obama's condemnation of Jeremiah Wright's comments?
No.
You think he actually agrees with them?
To me, it would be inconceivable that, for example, if your friend gave an award to Louis Farrakhan, that you wouldn't have some areas of agreement with that person if you remain that person's friend.
Well, he does have areas of agreement with his friend, just as he said yesterday he has. Did you accept the parallel comparison to his grandmother, where he obviously has massive areas of agreement, but he actually specified some areas of disagreement with his grandmother, as I think you too, must have disagreements with friends that are serious, and you must have disagreements with relatives that are serious, don't you?
Sure, but this is not his relative. This is someone he chose to have as his minister and friend. If the vast majority of Americans, when they hear these horrible, hateful comments by Wright, cannot stand it. They would, if they heard it in a church, they would walk out. That's why I say that he must agree with some of it. I mean, otherwise, why would anybody sit there and listen?
Okay, let's bring in Melissa Harris Lacewell, professor of politics and African American studies at Princeton University. She is the author of Barbershops, Bibles, and BET, Everyday Talk and Black Political Thought. She is also a seminarian at Union Theological Seminary in New York. Melissa Harris Lacewell, what are the kinds of disagreements you may have had in your life and others you know have had in their lives with their pastors, people in preaching positions in their churches?
Well, let me say a couple of things for full disclosure. First, I taught at the University of Chicago for 7 years, and during those 7 years that I taught at Chicago, I also attended Trinity United Church of Christ. So I was a regular attendee there. I was not a member, as I am a member of another church. So I can speak about even my disagreements with Reverend Wright. But I think, you know, for me, rather than sort of thinking about it as the disagreements that we have with our friends or family members, as useful as that was when Barack suggested, you know, his sort of complicated relationship of both loving his grandmother and also recognizing sort of forms of soft bigotry that emerge from her, I think that as a country, for example, we actually do a very good job of judging some elements of our community by the very best of themselves and not by the very worst. And most importantly, I would say, sort of the way that we think about our founding fathers. If we think about Thomas Jefferson, someone who was not only a slaveholder, because one might say, well, holding slaves as a Southern gentleman was just part of the time. But not only was he a slaveholder, he also articulated the strongest, most vehement, and long-lasting racist language at the founding of our country. He, in notes on the state of Virginia, basically inscribed within our American context the notion of inbred racial difference and the ways in which black people could never be considered for citizenship. He also wrote the Declaration of Independence, in which he says that all persons are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, and among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. How foolish would we be to reject Thomas Jefferson, reject the important contributions and the words, dare I say, that Thomas Jefferson said, even while he held in bondage other human beings? If we judged him only as an enslaver and as vicious and nasty and awful and intergenerationally inhuman as that was, going far beyond the sermons of Reverend Wright, this is a man who did vicious and terrible things, and yet we recognize with complete clarity as a country the value of the words that he spoke, the value of the words that he wrote, and the meaning that they had, the kind of flexibility that they had to create for us a great country. So I think that we actually do a very good job of understanding the very best of people and not the very worst, if and when we decide that that's what we want to do.
Joining us now is Brad Braxton, professor in the Divinity School at Vanderbilt University in Nashville. Professor Braxton, jump in here on what you've heard so far. There seems to be, in what we've developed so far in this conversation, a willingness sometimes to forgive indiscretions or negatives in a person's life and look at the totality of it. And then in other times, we seem less forgiving about that. And at this point in the discussion, it seems like racial perspectives have something to do with that.
I think they have everything to do with it. And first of all, thank you for having me on, and I'm delighted to be with my colleagues as well. I think fundamentally this conversation will not be righted that we're having in our country until we get some important historical context. So I'd like to do that in two ways very briefly. I think, first of all, there needs to be a larger conversation about the roots of the black church and the development of black Christianity, and why even language like that makes spiritual sense, religious sense, in the current context. I think that's the first thing I'd like to talk about, just that kind of context. And then second, I think there needs to be some broader discussions about what I will call the prophetic mindset. First, back to the concept of the black church. One of the missing developments or aspects of the current conversation is the fact that the black church rose as a creative response in many regards to a kind of hegemonic, dominant form of Christianity, a distorted form of Christianity, I would even say, where you have Christian missionaries offering a version of Christianity that is supporting the vile enslavement of other human beings. And this became very real to me when I visited the Ghanaian slave dungeons not too long ago. And to be there in Ghana and to see that you had European chapels literally above the dungeons where Africans were being held prior to the long journey in slave ships. So the African Americans come to Christianity in the modern period in a very intriguing way. And that has not been lifted in terms of the development of the black church. And in the halls of the slave ships, on plantations, and as black people are beginning to say, how do I hear this message of Jesus that's coming from slaveholders? How do I hear this? How do I understand this? It was in that broader historical context that a new form of Christianity arose, a form of Christianity that actually tried to correct the distortions and injustices inherent in a particular form that was given to African Americans as they were introduced to this country. That's the first thing I would like to say, and I'm wide open to further conversation about that.
Could I just interject one question,
please?
Which is, there seems an oddity to me in a slave population taking its religion from its masters.
This is the genius of African American Christianity, and there's been tremendous scholarship on this, in that what the African American community did was take the shell, if you will, of the Christianity that was given to them by the missionaries and the slave masters, and they carved out from that all of the racist, debilitating aspects and placed in it a new kind of content. And that's the missing aspect of this conversation, such that there is a different flavor. Many African retentions that came from the African continent were supplanted, or placed rather, into the shell of white missionary Christianity. And that's what I don't think many people understand. So that when churches talk about being unashamedly black or lift up African elements, that is not a kind of separatist language. It's not a lack of patriotism. It's a firm realization that in the slave ships, our ethnicities were stripped from us, and the concept of race was imposed upon us by slave masters. And what black people did in their brilliance was take a concept of race, foist it upon them for all kinds of negative purposes, and use it as a principle for dignity, nobility, political and spiritual mobilization. And so, quite honestly, I find some of the logic in the conversation quite faulty. Race is a concept foisted upon the black community to debilitate and enslave and violate us. We used it, did an improvisational riff on it, and made it an organizing principle for our self-advancement and even to help the country be its best self. And now, as we use that principle to organize ourselves, to raise our families, and to be the best citizens we can in this country, we are criticized by using a concept that we did not help to create. It's a fascinating logic that needs to be unpacked further.
Let's listen to Barack Obama describing services at his church yesterday.
Like other predominantly black churches across the country, Trinity embodies the black community in its entirety, the doctor and the welfare mom, the model student and the former gangbanger. Like other black churches, Trinity's services are full of raucous laughter and sometimes bawdy humor. They are full of dancing and clapping and screaming and shouting that may seem jarring to the untrained ear. The church contains in full the kindness and cruelty, the fierce intelligence and the shocking ignorance, the struggles and successes, the love, and yes, the bitterness and biases that make up the black experience in America.
I can confess to you that my first time in a black church 3 decades ago in Boston was a bit jarring, since I came from the very staid and at that time Latin Catholic tradition. But Melissa Harris-Lacewell, doesn't this go to, in one element, the essence of the controversy, just that some of us who, me the least on this panel, who've been in black churches, I've been to them in, around the country in different places several times, are not in any way jarred by the style of Reverend Wright's presentation. Certainly as soon as I saw the comments, I knew that they were political dynamite and very, very dangerous to the Obama campaign. But there was nothing stylistically about the presentation of it or about the congregation's reaction to it that in any way surprised me at all. But in my conversations anecdotally with white liberals, in fact, who are Obama supporters, which I think is your kind of strongest base for testing this. It is very shocking to see that. And isn't that part of the cultural divide?
I suppose so, that certainly we live in an incredibly segregated country. Even after many years of ending legal segregation, we still live in a country where African Americans and whites, for the most part, do not live near each other, do not work, although they may work in the same places, they don't work at the same level with one another. Our children don't go to school together, and we certainly do not worship together. Now, the thing is, I think it's actually perfectly acceptable not to worship together, in the sense that what my colleague was saying about the sort of particular theological resonances, as well as sort of the behavioral and structural and worship styles, people have a right to choose within the context of civil society if they want to sit quietly with their hands folded in their lap on Sunday morning, or if they want a more kinetic and bodily religious experience. What I think is the problem is the notion of valuing one of those experiences over the other, saying that one can only be worshipful and full of dignity if you are sitting quietly with your hands in your lap. So it's not so much that we are separate as that our separate also breeds a kind of not only ignorance but also judgment about sort of what the other styles are. I think part of what disturbs me in the public conversation around this has been the language that the church is somehow a fringe church. That's absolutely inaccurate. The church is very mainstream. I mean, part of the reason I attended that church is because nearly every black professor at the University of Chicago attended that church. The vast majority of church members are middle-class folks who work for the city government, who are postal workers, who are teachers, who are educators, and there's not some grand conspiracy on the part of Trinity United Church of Christ members to go out and infiltrate and destroy America. Quite the opposite. If you look at, as your guest has suggested, sort of the fruits of the labor of the church, then I think what you see quite clearly is a church that encourages and produces among its membership a great deal of social import, a great deal of personal healing, and more than anything, I suppose it does what a church is supposed to do. It brings people closer to God. I don't think anyone in the country should vote for Jeremiah Wright for the U.S. presidency. I think that would be a terrible idea. But Barack Obama is not Jeremiah Wright. He is part of a congregation full of people who are brilliant and engaged and patriotic and worshipful Christians.
Joining us now is Richard Cizik, Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the National Association of Evangelicals, an umbrella organization of 51 denominations and 30 million members in the U.S. Richard Cizik, from where you sit, how would you define the difference between, if we can use this phrase, black and white Christianity in the United States?
Well, obviously, I think we share some biblical mandates, biblical truths. We all are Christians in the broadest sense. We may not be a part of the same denominations, but we serve the same God and worship the same risen Savior. After all, this is Holy Week. And I think a lot of Christians, evangelicals, while they may be offended by the comments of Reverend Wright, in a certain sense, we understand better than others that, look, we all see through a glass darkly, but by God's grace we persevere. And so we understand in the prophetic tradition, even in our own movement, that in the past, for example, fundamentalists have appealed to race to build a political movement. We know that from the Southern strategy that Richard Nixon employed. And so, look, Christians have to recognize that we all live under the cloud of fallibility, and our best efforts may not at times succeed. And so I think we bring a degree of understanding to this that maybe others on the outside wouldn't, simply because we have had preachers in the fundamentalist and some evangelical tradition that have, I think, espoused views that have at times been offensive.
We're running out of time on this subject, but I do want to close it by offering the final minute to Frank Schaefer, a writer. He is the author most recently of Crazy for God, How I Grew Up as One of the Elect, Helped Found the Religious Right, and Lived to Take All or Almost All of It Back. Frank Schaefer, from your perspective and experience with the religious right, how do you see this controversy as it stands today?
Well, I take a little bit of a different angle. For those people who have read Crazy for God, they'll know that I grew up in evangelical royalty, so-called. My dad was Dr. Francis Schaefer, founder of the religious right, founder of the evangelical pro-life movement, both of which I have left. But what I see here is intense hypocrisy. My father crisscrossed the country calling for the violent overthrow of the U.S. government in books like A Christian Manifesto, published in 1980. What happened to him after that? He was invited to the White House, was a confidant of President Reagan, Ford, Bush Sr. No one ever distanced themselves from his prophetic words as a white evangelical, and he wasn't even yelling them in a sermon style that lends itself to hyperbole, as was Reverend Wright. My dad was writing this down. If you read A Christian Manifesto, he compares America to Hitler's Germany. Then he says there comes a time when their legitimacy can be attached to the use of force to change the government if they won't change and they're doing something sinful. And I would just say there's a double standard here that we heard at the beginning of this show with one of your other guests talking about investigating this preacher and smear by association against Barack Obama that just absolutely infuriates me, to be honest. I'm very, very angry as a white 55-year-old American who's always voted Republican in every election, someone who helped found the religious right. I think this double standard is disgusting. I'm not judging what Reverend Wright said as right or wrong, but if you compare the volatility of his comments to those made by people like Jerry Falwell, who has been approached by John McCain before Falwell's death to patch up his ties with the conservative movement, or if you look at Pat Robertson blaming America for 9/11 and the sins of accepting the gay community and realize he gave his endorsement to Rudy Giuliani and Giuliani accepted it. This is a double standard. White American candidates from the left or right, Hillary Clinton or McCain, can accept the endorsement and the friendship and comfort of fundamentalists, of left-wing white rabble-rousers like the late Bishop Moore of New York, for instance, who is an Episcopalian just like John McCain is. Where are the clips of Bishop Moore railing against the United States as he did as often as he served communion next to John McCain? So my view is this is an act of hypocrisy. It underlines the racism that we have in this country. And as I say, I emphasize, I come to this as a white, middle-class American Christian who has been active in the right wing, but just out of a sense of fairness and decency, cannot stand to see an honorable and decent man like Barack Obama judged by a different standard.
I'm sorry, Frank Schaefer, we're going to have to break it there. Thank you very much for that perspective, and I'd like to thank the rest of our guests. Richard Cizik, Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the National Association of Evangelicals. Brad Braxton, Professor in the Divinity School at Vanderbilt University. Melissa Harris Lacewell, Professor of Politics and African American Studies at Princeton University. And Ronald Kessler, Washington correspondent of Newsmax.com. Which Way LA was produced tonight by Katie Cooper and Karen Radziner. Our technical director is Mike Newport. I'm Lawrence O'Donnell, sitting in for Warren Olney. Join us again for Which Way LA on 89.9 KCRW.
Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.